Create Art Podcast. Conversations. Replenishing your creative energy with Emil Pandolfi. Hello, friends. This is Timothy Chemo Bryan, your head instigator for Create Art Podcast, where I use my 20 years of experience in the arts and education worlds to help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. Do you sometimes suffer from low-level creative energy? In this episode, I'll be talking with Emil Pandolfi about his approach to keeping his creative energy at a high level to fuel his professional career. Now, even if you are not a professional artist, this conversation is going to help you maintain and improve your creative energy by taking note of what a professional does to maintain their output. Now, as an amateur artist, like many of you who listen to this podcast, life can get in the way of my practice. Now, you couple that with my recent diagnosis of MS in 2021 and being a father of twins and having a full-time job, energy is at a premium. So how do you refuel your creative tank and create the art that you were meant to create? Well, for me, I read a lot of magazines and newsletters to get inspired for projects. I listen to podcasts about art that I've shared with you in previous episodes. And on Friday nights, after I put my girls to sleep, I go out to local poetry readings and occasionally read poems, but mostly I go there to support other artists on their journey, which reminds me of my journey. Now, sometimes you must expend energy to get energy, and that's how I maintain my energy levels. Does it always work? Not every time. Like you, my life has different pulls on my energy, and different priorities demand my attention. Let's talk about my guest this week for a moment before we go into the conversation. Now, Emil, with more than a half billion streams across platforms including Pandora, Spotify, and Apple Music, is among America's most popular piano artists. Although a majority of his performance repartee are lush, intricate arrangements of Broadway and pop standards, his influences are, in fact, more classical than pop. It is this subjective layering of classical style which Pandolfi infuses into the broad palette of his performance selections that continues to resonate with audiences everywhere. Recording since 1991, the pianist's albums of familiar music have sold over 3.5 million CDs nationally. This has earned Emil the distinction of being one of the top-selling pianists in the music industry, distributed online as well as in specialty, gift, and bookshops across the nation. Now, with 30-plus albums, most major online retailers also carry Emil's music for download, and it's streamed to thousands of times daily on Spotify, Pandora, and other streaming platforms. Now, I present to you the conversation that we had about replenishing your creative energy. So, thank you all for listening in to Create Art Podcast, where today we're going to be talking about replenishing your creative energy. And with me today, you heard the intro before we started this conversation. I do have Emil with me here to give me the professional view of what that looks like for us. Emil, how are you doing today?
Great. We had here in South Carolina, and we had some chilly weather, and it's a nice change.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. Absolutely. And I know it's taken us a little time to get together because I had a power outage for 5 days.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry about that. That's awful.
It's okay. It was nice, quiet time away from podcasting, away from everything, you know.
And your kids like the hotel. That's good.
The kids love the hotel. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad I have you on here today because, you know, you're a professional. You do this for a living. And I think it's going to be really important for our listeners that are, you know, delving into, you know, making art either on a professional level or, you know, as their side hustle. But for you as a professional, how do you know when that creative energy needs to be replenished?
Okay. To be honest, I almost never deal with that. It's because I love every time I get up in the morning, I go to the studio and I start playing something or other. But if it does need to be replenished, let's say I have a deadline of playing these particular pieces of music, I just go to something that I already like to play. What I do, I try to surround myself with beautiful things, artwork. I'm not an artist, but I'm not a visual artist, but I love paintings and I love watching a ballet. If I need to get inspired, I might turn on Riverdance and watch these amazing athletes, dancers do what they do. And it doesn't take long before something kind of just clicks. In my case, I often have deadlines. I have to do a particular piece of music, whether I want to or not. But I think that it's worthwhile for me to take some time away from that and play. I feel like playing some Chopin or something that inspires me. And I just get all excited about it. And then I say, okay, I'll go over here and do what I need to do. Again, because I'm doing it for a profession. But I think if you just go to other forms of artwork, literature or poetry or famous paintings or go to a museum, I think all those things seep into your consciousness. You don't do it with the desire to be inspired. You just do it and you get inspired, I think.
That's true. And it's really enjoyable to go through an art gallery and, you know, to take that time away from everything else and let that subconscious part of your mind figure out whatever issue that you're having. You know, let's say you're working on a piece by Chopin and you just can't quite get that certain section. Step away, go look at some art. And there you go.
Yeah, it has always worked for me. It's odd to discuss how to do it when you're in the doldrums because I'm almost never there. I'm happy to say it's just part of my personality. It's just unlike you, I'm a one trick pony. I play piano and that's it. But I surround myself with other kinds of art. I love seeing people do. It could be athletes or gymnasts or circus performers who do amazing things, and you say, oh my gosh, how do they do it? Mm-hmm. And that kind of gives it a kickstart.
Good deal. Good deal.
There's a silly country song title that's, I see something like that somebody does something extraordinary, and the guy says, I don't know whether to kill myself or go bowling. I always choose bowling.
Yes, always choose bowling. And today's brought to you by the PBR Bowling Leagues. So, Emil, you've talked about, you know, different ways that you replenish that inspiration and that energy for yourself. How important is it for you to have the high level of creative energy that you have in your profession?
Well, I think the most important thing for any artist is authenticity. And so rather than now you do your studying and you get your technique and the discipline that you're in, whether it be dancing or playing the piano or singing or whatever it is. So you have to have, given that you have your technique to whatever degree it is, that's a separate thing. But as far as having that creative energy going, I think if you're stuck and don't know what to do, I say step outside yourself and look at yourself. What is your default place? Like, who are you actually artistically? When from a pianist viewpoint, if I am going in, I'm in a piano shop or I'm in a place and there has a piano there and I have to touch it, what do I do? Do I start in the middle? Do I start at both ends? Do I play disjunct things? Do I play melodious things? Because my default place, what I just naturally default to, tells me who I am musically. And all of my piano, in my profession, they're all piano arrangements, solo piano arrangements of tunes that have been written by somebody else. They're all cover tunes. So why do they sound like me? Because I'm authentically me. I mean, whether people like it or not, I can't have no control over. But I don't do something that is not authentically me. Sometimes I think people are not sure how to find out what's authentically them. Well, look at yourself, see what you do. How do you talk? Like, look at me. I talk with my hands all the time. Some people don't. Some people, I talk enthusiastically. Maybe some people are very slow talking. And that's who you are. And that's what you should do with your art.
Oh, no, I agree entirely. Absolutely. Now, I was going to ask you about what's the overall impact for replenishing your creative energy from negative sources? Because I read your book on Play It Like You Mean It, and you had talked about, you know, you had overcome smoking, which is something that I'm overcoming right now to get that out of my thing. And I'm talking with my hands too, with my, you know, famous quotes, but I've relied on that in the past as a creative energy source. What's the impact of, you know, those negative sources of creative energy?
Well, I think that what I have done over time is remove from my day those things that I don't like to, you can't remove everything. I mean, but removing those things that I don't like to do, and I'm left with what I do want to do. And as far as I'm not exactly sure what the question is. How do I use negative things to turn it to a positive?
Well, actually, what's the impact of using negative sources of energy on your craft? Maybe that not that you do, but maybe that you've seen other people do.
Okay, I can say there are many times in my career where I'm doing, I'll just call it work for hire. I have to play a certain song for a certain event, right? And I don't even like the song. I don't want to do it, you know, and I keep finding other things to do besides work on that thing. But then I think it comes down to, in my book, I call it digging a ditch. You start working on, like, disinterested, thinking about your day at the beach, but you're playing the notes and you're reading the notes on the page and you got to go through humdrum. Because at some time, this has happened to me many times. It was a piece of music that I didn't feel I could even do, like maybe a Michael Jackson tune or something that is not me at all, even if I love the song or I admire the artist. But I discover, wow, I actually could do something with that. And because the job has made me do it, otherwise I wouldn't have touched it. But that's a kind of a negative. I avoid music that I don't like. But if I have to play it for a deadline, because it's my profession, it shows me that, you know, you got to think outside your box. And we all know that as a phrase, but you actually have to do it. And the more I do the busy work of going through it while I'm thinking about being at the beach, all of a sudden something clicks and I say, so that's how they get that sound. And I've discovered something new that I never would have discovered if I had my druthers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, my tagline for Create Art Podcast, as everyone knows, is, you know, taming your inner critics and creating more than you consume.
I love that.
Good deal. Well, I got to credit my wife for that because she's fantastic with one-liners. She's married to me, so obviously she has to be good with one-liners. But for you, how do you tame that inner critic that we all have? You know, obviously we don't necessarily want to get rid of it because it does have some benefit to us. But how do you tame that inner critic in your practice?
That's a good one. I guess, you know, I don't, it's funny. I'm not having an answer for that. How do I tame that inner critic? I guess I don't. I leave it. I let it be. And it's part of my process of learning. I say, okay, if I really don't like that, start meticulously looking at it, just take it apart. What is it I really don't like? Because I think the inner critic says, you don't play Michael Jackson tunes because that's not who you are. Well, okay, that's a big generality. Mm-hmm. So what part of it is actually happening? It's kind of like, I can't play this piece of Chopin, but what I really can't play is those two bars. The rest of it I could get away with, or I could play. And so I think Michael Jackson is a good example because I love his music, but it's nothing whatever like me. It's not in my background. My whole background is classical. It's just completely different. And he's a wonderful artist. But I start examining it closely. How did he get that sound? It becomes a detective work. I come away learning some technique in my case at the piano. Mm-hmm. To imitate the rhythm that he has in that piece of music. I'm working on his tune Bad right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not a piano tune in any way, but you can do it. And I have to discover how it's just like when I'm playing my classical, I'm used to really intensely looking at how did they make that sound? I mean, from nothing, they got that. Mm-hmm. And so I do the same with pieces of music that I'm not familiar with or that I feel like I cannot do. And I think meticulous investigation is what works for me.
So for you, what's the next thing coming up for you? Obviously you are an accomplished and you have this wonderful book out, which everyone should go grab a copy of. I know I got a copy of it and I'm very happy that I did. Play It Like You Mean It. And it's not just for folks that are musicians. I found a lot of things that I could relate to other art forms with that book. But for you, what's next down the road for you?
For me, I've never stepped away from classical music, but I haven't done classical performances in a very, very long time. My whole career is my arrangements of movie themes and musicals. Mm-hmm. And that's my thrust. That's what I love doing. And it's also my career. But mm-hmm. for now, I'm backing off on public concerts till I can put together a classical performance I always have the listener in mind. So I'm not trying to play for the Juilliard crowd. I'm trying to play for you and me and play. So I'm playing the classical pieces that I'm playing are those that are popular, like Clair de Lune, A Consolation by Liszt, Traumerei. I mean, they're things that even if people don't know them, they're pop. Saint-Saëns has some things, you know, that you can do. Excuse me. And it for me, because I don't do classical on a regular basis, it's going to take a lot of months.
Sure.
So that's my next goal. And it's just for my own pleasure, really. I'll keep doing my other things.
Gotcha. And for those, for our listeners out there, you know, it might be a good idea, let's say you're a painter or a dancer or something like that, to pick up Emil's book and take a look through it, because I found, I've got 3 pages of notes. I got to say, single-spaced, Times New Roman 8-point font from that, where you do talk a lot about creativity. Yes, your main thrust is the piano, but you do talk a lot about our creativity and how we can do better with it. And one of the things that I really liked, and that was back in chapter 19, when you're talking about the doldrums and the whole ditch digging kind of, can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because that's one of the things that really resounded with me is, you know, when we're doing the things that we have to do for money or for pay, but then, you know, putting it into that whole ditch story metaphor. That you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, that's a very accurate metaphor because, and by the way, just to elaborate on what's in the book, I say you've got this 100-foot ditch to dig, but you've got a dull shovel and you're starting in a hard ground and you just you've got a dent going. Mm-hmm. And so it can be very frustrating and disappointing and everything else. When I have to do that with music, I put the sheet music in front of me. I, on purpose, that's one time I do not play it like I mean it. I don't be authentic. Mm-hmm. I don't be anything. I'm saying, oh, that note's a C, that note's a B, this is a whatever. And I'm honestly, I could be daydreaming, but part of my attention has to be looking at the sheet so that I can play the notes that are on the sheet. And I'm just going through it mindlessly like a robot. Mm-hmm. And I do that through the entire piece of music. And I go back and do it some more. And I don't judge myself. That's what was inner critic. That's not no time for judging. This is a time for letting some of these notes get into my consciousness. And before long, I find something about it, one measure or a couple of measures or a phrase that appeals to me. And I can say, oh, that's kind of cool. I wonder what that's about. And it actually gets my interest going. I actually think, oh, that's fascinating the way they did that. I mean, this is a real process that really happens. It's not a theoretical thing. Mm-hmm. You have to do it. So you start by first, you have to get rid of that, oh God, I have to do this. You mm-hmm. get rid of that and you just say, just do it mindlessly. Just mindlessly do it. And eventually some part of it is going to strike a chord, to use a metaphor. And you'll say, that interested me. Or you may not even like it, but I think this is music that I've never liked, but it sure is interesting how they create it. Because every artist is different, and I know myself really well. I know what I do artistically. I sit at the piano and instantly I come out because that's who I am, and I've known that most of my life. Pardon me, but so anyway, that's my as much as I can think of at the moment about that. Sure. You start doing it, and eventually it takes hold.
Excellent. Excellent. And everybody go at it's chapter 19, mark it in the book, get the highlighter out for that. Cause that's a really important chapter. Emil, was there anything that I haven't asked you yet that you really wanted me to dive into with you today?
I think I would like to elaborate a little bit more on an artist, particularly an artist who are beginning their career, not about the business end of it yet, but not knowing, some people say, I don't know who I am artistically, or what are they, try this, they try that. And that's fun. That's great. Try all these different things. But I really think that something that the most obvious thing is to watch yourself, how you interact with people at a party. Are you the life of the party? Are you the wallflower? What are you? And here's a good one. If your friends were going to impersonate you, what would they do? Would they start shouting and ranting, or would they be very quiet? Would they be a good listener? Would they make fun of how you always do this thing with your head? I mean, you know, if you really, really look at it, it's easy to find out who you are artistically. And then whatever your discipline is, whether it be painting or music or dancing, you go for that. Either you go for ballet or you go for modern. Mm-hmm. You go for Raphael or you go for Jackson Pollock. It's just, what are you drawn to? And I think in art, you have to find your default place. And that is who you are. You may think, I want to play jazz. Well, if you're not a jazz, if that's not your authentic thrust, then that's probably not for you. Just listen to it.
It's one thing that I've noticed is that because I have kids and I have a 21-year-old stepson, is that, you know, with people's day jobs, careers, stuff like that, a lot of people are focused on, okay, what's going to get me the most fans? What's going to get me the most money? But the most successful artists, they take the risks. I'm thinking of Bob Dylan when he went electric. You brought up, the painter.
Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, Jackson Pollock. You know, he didn't start with the drip paintings. He started a different way, and then he decided to change, and we, you know, and we're still talking about him today here in 2020 about the works that he does. And, you know, I think it's important what you said about being your authentic self, and that will come across to the audience naturally. You won't have to force it. And like me, I love jazz. Don't think I can play it to save my soul, but I enjoy, you know, supporting jazz musicians, you know, buying their records and attending their concerts. For me to, you know, go and pick up a jazz bass, not going to happen today.
You know, that's interesting because all my life I've been surrounded by classical music. I have sisters who are in classical, and mm-hmm. it is the most natural thing in the world. Part of it is being Italian because I grew up in an Italian household, and every male Italian thinks he's Pavarotti, and mm-hmm. opera music is like pop tunes, and it was the most natural, comfortable thing. And if I were painting, I would try to paint like the Raphaels. I would not try to paint like Jackson Pollock. I would end up being a very poor Jackson Pollock. Mm-hmm. But if I were a dancer, I've always, as a matter of fact, I've played for ballet classes in the past. I would take ballet if I had any gift for it, which I do not. Mm-hmm. But I might even take ballroom dancing. But I mean, those are the things I'm drawn to naturally, mm-hmm. and I think it's a very simple thing if you just really look at yourself and don't go into a lot of psychology things, psychological down a rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. I think you just think, look at me. This is what do I do? What do I do all day? Do I sit in front of a computer? Am I active? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes the most obvious things elude us just because we didn't take the trouble to have a look.
That's true. Well, thank you so much for that. Is there one thought you'd like to leave the listeners with on, you know, replenishing their creative energy or just creativity in general?
Yeah. Every single person is creative. I mean, they're from the time you were a little tiny child, you made a bracelet out of grass, or you played dandelions and you tried to catch the dandelion fluff that flew away, and you did it your way. And if you look at how you approach the simplest tasks, when you're doing the dishes, do you do them a very orderly way or do you do them very chaotic? Mm-hmm. And I think that you find a discipline that appeals to you, again, whether it be visual arts or music or dancing or gymnastics or whatever. And I think you shouldn't think of that some people are creative and I'm not. No, everybody is. Everybody can write a sentence, but some of us are great authors. So mm-hmm. I think it has to be taken out of the special category and put in the normal category. Everyone is an artist to some degree, and some are good and some suck.
Yeah. Well, I paint like a 4-year-old on crack. I can tell you that. <That's right. laughs> But it's the enjoyment of doing it, and it's one of my ways to, you know, get that creative energy, replenish that when, I work at 9 to 5 with the federal government, and that can get to be a whole lot of fun. But then I can, sit back with my kids, do some crazy paintings, and put them up on the wall and laugh at them years later.
Yeah, I think by the way that creative sometimes thinks, to be creative, you have to be really good at it. No, you're just creative. I mean, I can do a stick drawing of something and it gives me pleasure. It's never going to be in an art gallery, but it's a creative impulse and I can do it. No, don't stop yourself because you're not the best at it.
Exactly. We need our, number one folks to be up there and do their art. But we also need everybody to feel comfortable in doing that art. Maybe you make a career out of it, maybe you don't, but I know at the end of the day, the bookcases that I have behind me have a lot of authors behind them that have, thousands of years of experience. But I also have 4 of my books up on there to go, I can do that too. Maybe not with the success that they've had, but I can put something out into the world like that, and it does my heart good.
That's good. I agree.
Excellent. Well, Emil, again, thank you so much for joining us here today on Create Art Podcast. And we definitely are going to look forward to new things coming out by you. And everyone should go grab the book and go on to YouTube and watch this fine gentleman tickle those ivories. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me as a guest. I really appreciate it, Timothy.
You got it. Thank you for listening to Create Art Podcast and this episode on how to replenish your creative energy. You know, it was a real pleasure talking with Emil about his practice and understanding his approach to replenishing his creative energy. Take a look at his book and look him up on his website and musical platforms. I'd like to hear from you on how you replenish your creative energy. Or if you have questions on how you can add this to your practice, reach out to me, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. And let's have that conversation. Now, if you got something out of this episode, I'd like you to share it with a friend. As fellow artists, when we sometimes need to help each other out and share the information we find and incorporate it into our practice, you can subscribe to this podcast at the website, createartpodcast.com, and links to this discussion will be in the show notes so you can learn from Emil. Now, go out there and tame that inner critic and create more than you consume. Go out there and make art for somebody you love, yourself. This has been a production of Gagglepod East Studios. At Gagglepod, we have been helping creatives tell their story through podcasting since 2017. Go to gagglepod.com to listen to all of our network shows and reach out to us so we can help you tell your story through podcasting.